Tonight on Banfield, closed for business. Doha, Qatar, which has been the rendezvous for Afghan refugees desperately fleeing the Taliban, says, "I'm sorry, we are full." We've got this exclusive video showing a Qatar airport hangar jam-packed with refugees. So where does that leave the tens of thousands of American citizens and Afghans still trapped back in Kabul and beyond? Here's what the president had to say today.
We have no indication that they haven't been able to get in Kabul through the airport. We've made an agreement with the Taliban thus far. They've allowed them to go through. It's in their interest for them to go through. So we know of no circumstance where American citizens are carrying an American passport or trying to get through to the airport. But we will do whatever needs to be done to see to it they get to the airport.
Well, the general consensus among the news and me and images coming out of Kabul tell a different story. And we're going to have that story for you. And then later on, Ella French. We are remembering the fallen hero and member of the Chicago Police Department killed on duty. Her partner still in critical condition after being shot twice in the head. His father, with strong words for the mayor of Chicago as to why he believes this happened in the first place. We will talk with our friends from Live PD on a special edition of Policing in America tonight on Banfield. Despite an effort to calm the waters, in a speech today, President Biden didn't seem to address the crushing reality that landing sites for all of those evacuees coming out of Afghanistan have themselves become a crush. Take a look at this exclusive video that's been sent to me from a contact in Qatar. It's from an airport hangar, and I want you to carefully listen to what the conditions are like for the thousands of people who are jammed inside this steaming hot hangar.
This is the big hangar house here in Qatar Airbase. Look at the number of people who are staying here. More people keep coming. There is only one bathroom and one shower.
And there are many children and elderly in that hangar. Back in Afghanistan, as the Taliban plays nice sometimes for the cameras, the actual takeover wheels are definitely in motion. I want to show you Shabnam Khan Darwan. She's on the right. She is a news anchor in Afghanistan who has now been blocked by the Taliban from going into her workplace to broadcast her daily show on the RTA network. I also want you to take a look at this photograph. It is from the wife of one of our guests from last night, Penn Farthing. His wife's name is Kaiza, and she did make it out on a flight, this flight, in fact. But there were dozens and dozens of empty seats. Just look at it. It looks almost empty. And yet back on the tarmac in Kabul, there are thousands and thousands of desperate souls left behind wanting to leave. We have learned, in fact, something new as well about flights. And that is the face that belongs to one of the bodies that was seen falling from the C-17 aircraft that had just taken off from the Kabul airport. And this is tragedy with a capital T. It's a teenager named Zaki Anwari. He was an aspiring soccer player whose mission in life became much more primal than just playing soccer. His mission was to get out of Afghanistan alive. And he did not. I also have an update for you on this unbelievable video. That baby, the viral video coming out of Kabul at the airport, according to the Pentagon, the parents of that little baby begged those Marines for medical attention for their child. And we have now learned that the Marines did just that. The child was treated and returned to the father. It is all a much different picture from the one President Biden has been painting, especially in that speech today. And for that, I want to turn to my News Nation colleague, the White House correspondent for us, Allison Harris, who's been busy all day following this story. You know, one of the things that President Biden was talking about today, Allison, was any American who wants to get out can get out. I'm sorry, I have original reporting that defies that logic, and I know that you're hearing a lot, too, that defies that.
Certainly. And that soundbite that you played from the president saying that he hasn't heard any reports of people having trouble getting to the airport, that confused every reporter in the White House press corps because it contradicts all the reporting that we are hearing on the ground in Afghanistan. The Pentagon and the president have said that they do not know how many Americans remain in Afghanistan, but at the same time, the president has reaffirmed his commitment that every American will be able to get out. He says that troops will remain in Afghanistan even beyond the deadline that he has set, that he has now agreed to with the Taliban, of August 31st. We know that the State Department has issued new credentials for Americans who are there. They are meant to show the Taliban at these Taliban-controlled security checkpoints that they are credentialed Americans to then be able to go through those checkpoints to get to the airport, to get on a plane. But we are hearing reports on the ground, as you are, that that's not exactly working. And I thought it was significant today, for the first time from a president who has been defiant, who has continued to defend his decisions on Afghanistan, who has said the buck stops with him. Today we heard for the first time him talk about the risks involved with this evacuation effort. Quote, he said, "I cannot promise what the final outcome will be or that it will come without risk of loss." Ashley.
Okay, so Allison, they were downplaying the chaos a lot in the news conference today, but the truth of the matter is that reports on the ground have, believe it or not, 10,000 people inside the airport sleeping, trying to catch flights, sometimes for days in the hot sun on the rubble of the airport, 50,000 in the crush outside the airport. When they eventually get on planes, they're no longer going to Qatar. Did you hear that Bahrain is now the new site where they will land those evacuees?
Yes, it's one of several. So the Secretary of State actually put out a lengthy statement this evening, a statement of gratitude, listing the number of countries that are volunteering to resettle some of these refugees as Americans and Afghans are fleeing the country. The Secretary of State calling this an unprecedented global effort. So not only is the U.S. looking for more bases, and I know that is one of them, they're also working with other countries to find different places to resettle people who are fleeing the country. I mean, places like Tajikistan, Turkey, Mexico, Canada, a long list of countries that are helping in this effort right now. But I do have to share, earlier today, there was a 7-hour delay. So there were not any flights taking off from the airport in Kabul for 7 hours, despite the Pentagon saying that they are ramping up these evacuation flights. They have been wanting to do flights in and out every hour. They're wanting to get as many as 9,000 passengers out every day. But for 7 hours today, no flights were leaving. And that was because of the backlog of thousands of people who could not be processed in Qatar because so many are being evacuated quickly.
Just like those videos we showed, it is just too jam-packed and shocking to hear that American citizens are being beaten and that helicopters, U.S. helicopters, are now going out to do rescues. That was something that was in question. Allison, thank you. Thank you so much for your reporting tonight from the White House. We really appreciate it. I want to bring in Atiya Abawi, who herself was a refugee from Afghanistan. She made it out in the 80s, only to return in 2008 as the bureau chief for CNN in Kabul. Welcome back, Atiya. So first, I want to say that today is Friday. And this is the first Friday that the Taliban's been in power. And when they were in power, when I was there, Fridays were a day of prayer and executions, dismemberments, stoning of women, and executions of men. Do we have any reports that any of that has been going on in Kabul?
We do not have reports of that going on in Kabul. In fact, they are putting on a very, for lack of a better word, friendly show. I say that when I know for a fact that they are whipping Afghans, they are whipping people trying to get to the airport. That's the way that they're trying to maintain control. But you're right. Back during the Taliban rule from 96 to 2001, Ghazi Stadium, which is the Olympic stadium there, a stadium that was built in 1923 by the king at the time to help sports in Afghanistan, was used for execution, public executions. And people from Friday prayers were forced to watch these executions so they could be scared. That same stadium, post 2001 was used for sports again. I went in there to do stories with female boxers. There was a female sprinter in the Tokyo Olympics. She was also in the Rio Olympics that would also practice there. And it's really sad to know that these girls won't be going back. It's a terrible thing to think about.
You know, I'll tell you, I actually drove into that stadium and I drove around the perimeter and I saw the bloodstains in the infield and I saw the places where they did the beheadings, where they did the stonings, where they did the dismemberments. There was actually a guide to show me. And no women were ever allowed in that stadium to watch any of this unless they were the ones being stoned. And that happened quite often. Speaking of women, I want you to just walk me through the story of Shadman Darwan, who showed up for work today at RTA Television. We're all broadcasters. We're all women broadcasters. 33 years for me. Does she have a chance in hell of ever going on the air again?
Well, it was her and one of her other female colleagues. They showed up. The Taliban said, go back home. We'll call you back in a few days. But then she found out from her boss that she's not allowed to come back. The Taliban have taken over the station, that they want it to be only for men. That said, she was devastated. She was on the app Clubhouse saying, what am I going to do with my life? I've worked for this. I dreamt about this. This is my job. This is what I wanted to do for my country. And I can't do that anymore. What am I supposed to do? That also said, the hypocrisy, let's go back to the hypocrisy of the Taliban. So they did this, but then for show, they went on air on Tolo TV, which is a private station in Afghanistan, and had a female anchor interviewing a spokesperson for the Taliban. But I talk about the hypocrisy because I'm talking about the show that they're putting on. They put on the show for Tolo. Tolo is a private station that was helped funded with partners from the West. So they knew that the West would be seeing this female anchor interviewing this Taliban spokesperson, and we would think that they're more progressive. They weren't 100% sure that we'd find out about these the public broadcasters. And that said, okay, so they let a woman interview them on Tolo this time. What's going to happen when the cameras leave Kabul? What's going to happen then?
Tolo, they probably thought Tolo wasn't going to put out that social media post. Pop that back up there because I got the translation for it and I want to read it for our audience so they know exactly what went out on social media after they put on their little dog and pony show. If we can look at that social media post again, this is the translation of what you're looking at. After capturing Kabul City by the Taliban militants, National Radio Television, RTA state-run news anchor, Shabnam Khan Darwan says she was not allowed to return to work. She said that the Taliban militants prevented her from going to her office yesterday to present her daily news TV show. So it's out there, and now it's pretty darn clear. She's not the only one either. We're getting other reports of other women who have not been allowed to continue as broadcasters. And there's a new news director who's, you know, Taliban, who said, we have a change in programming. I've heard that before in my job, but it had nothing to do with me being a woman. Atiya, thank you for your work in Kabul and for your understanding of this very fast-developing story and for being with us tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley.
Coming up, I'm going to take you back stateside for a very special edition of our weekend segment, Policing in America. It's because something happened that is very profound and you should see it. There is footage now from Chicago police officer Ella French's last moments before she was gunned down. And now it's been released publicly. And many want to know if it's politics as to why neither Ella nor her partner ever drew their service weapons before the people in this car allegedly gunned them down in cold blood. The other one, the other partner, still fighting for his life. Back in a moment. It is the weekend, and we usually cut right to our Policing in America guests to comment on the week's controversies and the heroics, all in the name of giving America a better lens as to what it's like to be a police officer in this country. But this week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to start by remembering Officer Ella French. She's the Chicago police officer who was murdered in cold blood while on duty during a simple traffic stop, shot down in the head, having never removed her service weapon at that. That is Ella right there through the window holding the flashlight just moments before she was murdered. Her partner, Carlos Yanez Jr., was also shot and is currently in the hospital in critical condition. That's the picture. Thumbs up, but it's bleak. He is struggling. His father, however, a retired police officer himself, is speaking out against the Chicago mayor, Lori Lightfoot, saying that she bears some responsibility when it comes to police shootings like this one. Joining us tonight are canine trainer Deputy James Craigmile, Sheriff Mark Lamb of Pinal County, Arizona, and face of the American Sheriff Network, and then finally Sheriff Mike Chitwood of Volusia County, Florida. To the three of you, thank you so much for joining me. We're going to do things a little different. Craigmile, I'm going to start with you just to get your feelings on the fact that this was the week where Ella French was remembered. It was her funeral, and thousands of people showed up. Police from all over the country were there as well. She'd only been on the force 3 years, James, and she was working in one of Chicago's toughest neighborhoods. Her mom spoke during the funeral. I couldn't believe how she held it together. Also, the father of her partner, Carlos Yanez Jr., also spoke. And I just want to play a little bit of it and then talk about it. Take a look.
It was a smile that lit up your face, my home, and captured my heart.
My heart is broken too. One side is so sad and broken because I feel Ella's mom's pain as a parent. And the other part of my heart is thankful to God that my son is still alive.
It's Corporal. Corporal Craigmile, listen, I've covered a lot of police officers' funerals, and I know that people come from all over the country, as do other officers. Something felt different about this one.
Yeah, this one, I think it felt different for a lot of people around the United States because, and around the world, because she was helpless in the sense that she had no idea what was going to happen. And first, I want to say that my heart and my prayers go out to her family and the officers up there in Chicago, and I pray for a quick and speedy recovery for her partner that was shot as well. It's unfortunate. We've got to do something. There's got to be some way to stop all this violence and this madness. This wasn't a race issue. This had nothing to do with race. This had to do with a guy that was in trouble. He didn't want to go to jail. He didn't want to go to prison. So he was going to shoot his way for freedom. And unfortunately, he took this young lady's life. And she was out there just protecting the citizens.
Yeah, those two, by the way, so the person you're seeing in the front seat there is Eric, Eric Morgan. And his brother on the left, who was sitting in the back seat, is Imonte. They call him Monte Morgan. The person who is alleged to have done the shooting was the one on the left with the tattooed face, the 22-year-old brother named Eric, or named Imonte, sorry, the 21-year-old brother named Imonte. The one in the seat is the one you saw in that cruiser, is the one on the right, and that's Eric. Apparently, Eric was cooperative with the police, but the reports are that Imonte, the one with the tattoos, was not cooperative. He was in the back seat. He wouldn't listen to instructions. He had an alcoholic drink in one hand, a cell phone in the other, and refused to cooperate, and a struggle began. They say he had the gun in his belt and just pulled it out and point-blank range from the back seat originally. He was out of the car, shot Ella with the flashlight, shot her partner, Carlos Yanez Jr., and then the body cam, which we don't have, shows him stepping over their bodies with the gun still in his hand. So eventually you're going to see that because the charges are extraordinary. First-degree murder and attempted murder, aggravated unlawful use of a weapon by a felon, and obstruction of justice. And by the way, just for good measure, they're both felons, these brothers. So for his part, Carlos Yanez Jr. released a statement from the hospital bed. I want to play that. Take a look.
Thank you for your support, your donations, prayers. I love you all. To my son CJ and my wife Brenda, this up for you.
Sheriff Lamb and Sheriff Chitwood, I want to get a comment from each of you on that. Sheriff Lamb, you start.
That's tough to watch. You know, I think I agree with you, Ashley and James, that this one hit home a little bit more than a lot of the other officer shootings we've witnessed. Maybe it's because it's a female, a mom, but this one just really hit home. And I think as Americans, we're tired of it. I can tell you for sure, in law enforcement, we're tired of the disobedience that parents have allowed, that the media has condoned, that politicians have condoned in this country. It's unacceptable. We have an officer now fighting for his life, one who's already lost her life. And that is a growing number and an alarming number this year. And I hope to see that curbed. But as Americans, you've got to stand up against this. Parents got to do a better job of raising their kids. These are clearly kids that have no respect for law enforcement. And it's sad to see. My heart goes out to Chicago PD, and my heart goes out to that officer who's struggling for his life. Prayers for him and prayers for Ella French's family.
Yeah, 22 and 21 years old, both felons and now up on these charges. Sheriff Chitwood, just a brief comment from you before we go to break on the Ella French story.
Ashley, my heart goes out to CPD. We have the same incident here in Daytona Beach. A young police officer 58 days ago was doing a park and walk in a neighborhood, came across a suspicious incident, and was shot point blank in the head. He just succumbed to his injuries, and he'll be buried Monday. So when I watch what happened to Officer French, and I watch what happened to her partner, I'm sitting here, and to echo what Sheriff Lamb said, there is an attack on the rule of law in this country. I don't know where we're going. These fine young men and women are being assassinated for representing the rule of law.
And they didn't draw their service weapons. It bears repeating, they didn't draw their service weapons. And the fear is that the dad of the officer who's recovering feels as though he had orders not to draw a service weapon unless and absolutely it was a sort of a catastrophic, I'm creating this language myself, but a very serious and catastrophic situation, which we all know can be, you know, can happen like that. Stay put, if you will. When we come back, I want to ask you guys about an incident with a domestic. Listen, a domestic is the most dangerous thing you guys do. And I know you do them all the time, especially like Friday nights and Saturday nights. I remember Live PD. I watched it regularly. What happens when you guys ask a woman, is the guy armed? And she says no. And then he is. We're going to show that after the break. And then I'm going to ask you about it. We're back after this. Back now with the guys from Live PD, Deputy James Craigmile. I have put you in your right spot now. Instead of calling you corporal, I'm calling you deputy. Sorry about that, James. Sheriff Mark Lamb and also Sheriff Mike Chitwood. You know it's all meant in good spirit, right? I just mess up sometimes. Okay, I want to take you to something that has bothered me all day. Garden City, Idaho, a story there, very tragic consequence, but it also is a real lesson in how quickly a domestic disturbance call can just get out of hand, you know, like that. Three officers got to a scene. They found a woman sitting on a stoop. That's not unusual, but that's where we pick up the video. I do want to warn some of our viewers that you may find some of this disturbing. So let's roll it.
All right. What's going on?
He's drunk.
Okay.
And B.
Okay. And?
I can't deal with it.
Okay. All right. Is he still inside?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is he just drunk? No weapons? No nothing like that?
No.
Are you injured?
No.
Oh.
Hey, 750 shots fired.
Yeah, you can see why I'm extremely upset by that. So, Deputy Craigmile, that is 58-year-old Thomas Bunde, B-U-N-D-E, I don't know how to pronounce it. He's the one who answered the door with gun in hand, saying that he was going to, you know, blow your effing head off, and he was killed. He was killed right then and there. What is distressing here is the answer that the woman gave, which was no. He doesn't have any weapons. So walk me through this from your perspective.
Yeah, I've been on these calls multiple times where you ask the victim or whoever the witnesses are, is he armed or is she armed? And at the time, maybe he wasn't. We'll just use this instance. Maybe he wasn't whenever she went out on the front porch. But clearly, whenever he opened the door, he had the gun. There's two things that happened here. Either the gun jammed or he was wanting suicide by cop, because he had enough time when he opened the door to actually shoot that officer in the head or shoot the officer point blank range. So this looks like more of a suicide by cop, just dealing with the domestic issues. But you were right at the beginning. Domestics are the number one, aside from traffic stops, the number one deadliest things that law enforcement officers can go on.
Yeah, family court is just about the worst place in the world to be as well. Lawyers will tell you they would well prefer to represent murderers than have to deal with family court. Domestic is awful. The passions rage. So just quickly, Sheriff Lamb, he's got the gun pointed right at the officer's head. He's yelling things like, "I'll blow your effing head off." The investigation that pursued ruled that, in fact, all was justified here. I am just assuming there is no other way that could have been ruled.
Yeah, if they had ruled any other way, I'd have been shocked. And thank goodness God was watching over that officer or deputy that night, because there is no way he could have really anticipated that. We always have to go into every call, even though they tell you there's no gun. We have to believe that there is a gun in there. But you still, that doesn't give you cause to necessarily pull your gun out yet. And you can see this took him by extreme surprise, but they still reacted quickly and they were able to neutralize the subject. His actions, his reckless actions, had consequences, and unfortunately he lost his life for it. But thank goodness the officers were safe and that he wasn't hurt, because that could have gone a very different way.
Sure could have. Okay, Sheriff Chitwood, I want you to weigh in on this next one. An LAPD officer was punching a man who was strapped to an EMT's gurney, but get this, the witnesses are defending the officer in this one. It all happened when the alleged attempted carjacker, who was armed, was arrested in San Fernando. The suspect was not going quietly. Hell no. He was cursing and threatening everyone in sight. And according to witnesses, keep in mind, we're in the age of COVID. He began spitting on firefighters and officers. Take a look at what happened next.
Take off that bag, Chrissy. How hard you are?
You were just crying, dude.
So what? Take off that bag. See how hard you are. Take off that bag. Big. Stop it, hardcore. Freeze.
So, Sheriff Chitwood, okay, spitting is an assault in most jurisdictions where I have, done my work. but then you still, even with the spit guard and everything, there's still punches thrown, and I'm wondering if this is going to be a lawsuit, if this guy, the spitter, is actually going to end up making some money here.
Well, unfortunately, Ashley, everybody sues us. And I can tell you, in the past 2 years, I've had two incidents that were similar to that, where deputies were restraining somebody in the back of the patrol car who were locked up for violent crimes, who spit in the deputy's face as they were putting a seatbelt on to save their lives in transport. And the deputy instinctively reacted by throwing a strike to the suspect's face. And when the complaint came in, I ruled that justified. Not only COVID, not only tuberculosis, not only AIDS, it's an assault. And the deputy is face-to-face contact, trying to do the right thing and follow policy. And these people are so out of their mind that they think spitting in the face, they're not going to get away with it. And instinctively, any of us, Ashley, if you get nose to nose with me and spit in your face, the first instinct is for the deputy to react. And in both of those cases, I ruled that strike was justified.
And let's remember, criminal code does call this an assault. That is what it is. Okay, I'm going to move to Central Florida real quickly, just south of Gainesville, where a dash cam video has been released of an incident in April where a reckless driver on patrol led police on this crazy, crazy goose chase. Suspect so brazen that at one point he slows down his SUV on the highway to let the pursuing officer catch up. Why? so that he can flip him the bird. Are you kidding me? Take a look at this.
He's in the wrong lane of traffic. Through the median. Heading toward Marin County, he's flipping me off.
Wow. Okay, so Sheriff Lamb, I have a question about protocol. Are you allowed to, like, what's the, I know you like your cruisers, I know you like your vehicles, but are you allowed to just kind of take, do what it takes? You know, like, what's the protocol there?
You know, we do. We tell our guys, look, I don't ever want to see damage to a vehicle, but what our job is to stop a threat to not just our guys, but to stop a threat to the community. This guy had total disregard for and no regard at all for anybody else's life while he was driving, going in the wrong side of the road, driving at high speeds, and putting officers' lives in danger as well. So we all absolutely encourage our guys to do what's necessary to stop them from posing a threat to our community. That is our job. And I think these guys did a good job at that. People would say that it's only because he flipped them off. No, it's because this guy was being a turd, breaking the laws and putting people's lives at risk.
I love the fact that you used the guy was being a turd. I think it's because we're on network television. I think, you know, outside of TV without a mic, you might have used a different word. Guys, thank you. I love spending my Friday nights with you. I really appreciate it. And Sheriff Chitwood, it's nice to have you join the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Ashley. God bless.
God bless. Okay, so conversations. These are all hard conversations. It's important to have them. We like doing that here at News Nation. And then I have this other conversation. It was one that the new host of Jeopardy had a couple years ago, and it's a conversation I think he really wishes he didn't have, because now that conversation's coming back to bite him in the you-know-what. We're going to find out why this guy just lost his job, and he's only had it for a week. Next. So it is the weekend. It's time to take a big exhale and take a look back with our folks and friends. The Weekend Review, we like to call it, but we like to make it funny. So we're doing it tonight with friend of the show, comedian Pete Dominic. He is the host of the podcast Stand Up with Pete Dominic, and he's great at waving. Also with us for the first time is comedian Anita Renfro. It's nice to have you. I love the glasses game. You are stepping it up. Next level, girl. Very nice.
Love it. Love it. Thanks for having me.
I'm getting the Sally Jesse vibe. So it's already fun. Okay, ready? Here we go. Jeopardy had some really big shoes to fill with the passing of Alex Trebek, but cue Mike Richards, the executive producer of the show, who 1 week after being announced as the new host found himself in, oh, this is just right, it writes itself. He found himself in Jeopardy. Boom, boom. Comments and jokes from Richards' podcast from 7 years ago were deemed offensive and sexist by many, and Richards has had to, you guessed it, he had to step down. So, Pete, you know, we all talk about cancel culture and everything, but holy frioli, I just think this was such a huge decision. They didn't find anything? They didn't, like, vet? They didn't go back to see if there's anything crazy? Were you shocked at hearing this?
No, because when I found out that the guy that got the job was a nobody whose main role was in charge of finding the guy to get the job, it was completely unsurprising to me. You know, Ashley, you've known me for a long time, and you know that I'm a fairly unremarkable white guy. So I understand where this guy gets his confidence from. I do. I totally relate to it. I understand it. But the idea that he has so much confidence that if his job is to find the new host, he finds himself. I mean, he pulled a Dick Cheney here. And I don't know.
Good
I think
reference.
The only real replacement for this guy is the actual Michael Richards from Seinfeld.
The real Michael Richards.
Who
didn't have any controversies, right? My goodness.
Right.
Okay. So Anita, let me give some background for anybody who is watching this story and doesn't know what was said on these podcasts 7 years ago. He was joking with a female co-host, calling her a hoe and a slut. Can I say that? I think I can say that on TV. He was looking at pictures of her friends, calling them fat, asked her if she'd ever taken nude pictures. In a conversation about her nose, he said something like, take it easy, you're not even Jewish. And then he also used derogatory terms for little people and for mentally disabled people. So it's interesting, Anita, that he's going to stay on as executive producer. Do you think that's in jeopardy as well?
I don't know how smart he can be if he didn't bother to scrub his internet history before appointing himself ruler. Like, I'll take dumb moves by short-sighted people for 200. I mean, that's him. It's the ultimate nepotism to, you know, say, I'm it, I'm the man. But I don't understand. I mean, he understands how the internet works, right? Don't you need to know that before you can exec produce a show? I mean, I'm not talking about your
executive.
Right.
I mean, seriously, I mean, just in this day and age when you're this high profile and you did this huge search that went on for, you know, ever, that you wouldn't do some vetting. I mean, that's what we all do. We look at people's social media when we're hiring. Okay, I'm going to move on from this one. I want you to go back in time to remember that awesome scene from The Empire Strikes Back when Darth Vader takes off Luke Skywalker's hand. But I know the lightsaber doesn't sound like that, but there is that moment, right? It's pretty intense. So take a quick look at this. So a reptile center, wait, don't do the reptile center yet. Hang on, take a look at the sound. Like, we're gonna play it up full, take a look. Okay, so first of all, I can't believe that all these little kids are there and they're just watching this whole scene. I also cannot believe, Pete, that she just jumped in. I guess she didn't really have a choice, right? Like, either jump in with the gator or lose that hand.
Well, to prepare for this segment, first of all, I watched that video 4,000 times and I did read about it. And she does know what she's doing. She jumped in there because she wanted to gain some leverage there. But Ash, you've got kids. I don't know what kind of birthday parties you have hosted or brought your kids to. But I mean, apparently the scorpion petting zoo and the great white shark riding rides were closed. I mean, alligator and child's birthday party should never be in the same sentence. But I will say this. That guy's name is Donnie. He was one of the dads there. He just jumped in, and apparently everybody's calling him Crocodile Donnie now. So that guy's famous now. And I also want to add, you know, Ash, if it were me, I would have jumped in there myself and taken that alligator right down.
Oh, I bet you would have, right? I could just see. But I love that you're going to call the guy who's jumping in right now Crocodile Donnie. But holy cow. You know, I think this all kind of resolved itself okay, but she sure could have lost her hand had they not been able to do this. But yeah, I'm with you on the five-year-old birthday party. Maybe don't put your hands in an alligator tank in front of a bunch of, right? It just seems so simple, doesn't it? Guys, we have to take a really quick break.
Oh,
so go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, what's the decision making? Chuck E. Cheese or chomping reptiles? I don't know, but that kid's going to get a great present.
Okay, when we come back after the break, I want you guys to weigh in on that story about Lionel Messi, the awesome soccer player who's like, oh, I don't know, he's worth like hundreds of millions. I don't even know anymore what they're paying him, but it's a lot. Apparently, he used a tissue, and that tissue's for sale. When we come back after the break, you'll find out for how much, and I'm going to get your comments on that back after this. All We are back live with our funny people, which I like to call you. I don't think that's a slur. Pete Dominic and Nita Renfro are joining me on the show tonight. Okay, let's go to the story about the soccer star Lionel Messi, Lionel, if you want to use the fancy pronunciation. He bid farewell to his longtime team Barcelona and then got a little emotional and he dabbed his eyes and wiped his nose. Everybody noticed it. He used a tissue. And guess what? That tissue is now on sale for $1 million. I am not kidding you. Here's Jimmy Fallon's take from The Tonight Show.
A tissue used by soccer star Lionel Messi during the press conference where he announced that he was leaving Barcelona is being sold for $1 million. You know we're living in troubled times when someone pays $1 million for a used tissue during a pandemic.
Okay, Anita, $1 million. Really? That thing,
50 cents.
That there is worth how much?
50 cents, at least. 50. For sure. Comedy spot.
Do you know how many Instagram followers he has? If you guys, like, it's crazy. He's got 253 million followers.
Well, the most... one of those has some money, but I want to say I just don't think this is how cloning works. I'm not sure if I was absent that day, but if you can take mucus and make a soccer mutant, I feel like Ted Lasso would certainly do this already, for sure.
Apparently, that's really what they thought. The seller was saying this tissue contains Messi's genetic material and can be used someday to clone a soccer superstar. Okay, hold on. I'm going to take you real quickly to San Diego. We're on the agenda at the Board of Supervisors meeting that was open to the public was the issue of mask mandates. And many of the anti-vax citizens lined up to share their opinions. And here is one such example, followed by Stephen Colbert's reaction from The Late Show. Take a look.
We should not be spending our time here and our life force energy fighting people who lack critical thinking and common sense, yet want to push a vaccine on us. You know what's funny? Saturn is in the same place as it was during the American Revolution of 1776, and you are the Redcoats.
That is crazy. That is the most insane thing I have ever seen or heard. Saturn is not...
Okay, Pete, you got 10 seconds to wrap up the show.
All over this country, people are going up to microphones and saying things that they have no idea about at all. Please let the experts do the research so that you don't go viral and embarrass your family. Please. I know what it's like.
Oh, Pete and Anita, thank you so much for being with me on this Friday night. Be sure to check out Pete's Stand Up with Pete Dominic wherever you listen to your podcast. Anita, you better come back here and bring those sexy glasses again. Both of you, enjoy your weekends.
You.
Mwah. Love you guys. See you hopefully again next week.